We don't have those kind of conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, her English is still really bad, so we can't really talk about anything deep. And she never really taught me Korean because that very reason, she was assimilating and she practiced her Korean. I mean, her English on her with her kids at home. So she as the older she got, the Konglish became more English and less Korean. But okay. We don't have deep conversations. That's why I have such a gaping hole in my heart with my parents, because we can't talk about anything serious or at length or in deep, because she can't speak good English and I can't speak good Korean because she didn't want to teach the Korean to me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Multiracial White Boy Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Noonan. I'm a mixed transracial adoptee from Vietnam. And this is my podcast where I examine the impact of my white upbringing by having personal discussions with other mixed individuals about racial identity. Hello, everybody. That small clip that you just heard is from my guest, actress Jennifer Field. Jennifer was raised in San Jose, California. Her Korean mother is a homemaker, and her English, Irish, German father is an attorney. Her love of performing began with piano and dance lessons at age 6, and by the time she was in 3rd grade, she was writing, producing, and directing, and acting in her own plays. Jennifer also competed in pageants, beauty pageants, and holds the title of Miss Asian America 2006-2007. So when I spoke with Jennifer, two things in our conversation really surprised me. The first being that I had no idea that there was a Miss Asian American pageant. No idea. Perhaps like many of you, I have only seen the Miss American pageant. Well, actually, truthfully, I've never watched an entire beauty pageant. I haven't. I'll be honest, beauty pageants always seem ridiculous to me. There was little diversity. The answers to these ridiculous questions were always so safe and people-pleasing. And in short, the whole beauty pageantry, you know, has never been for me. However, the Asian American beauty pageant is intended to have Asian American women reconnect with their culture. So for Jennifer, that meant reconnecting with her Korean roots and the community. And I admit, I was assuming and judging that all these beauty pageants, you know, are all the same. But thankfully, Jennifer really educated me about the Asian American beauty pageant. And it's different from the USA pageant. So that was really surprising and, quite frankly, really interesting to learn. I'm glad she educated me. I had obviously so many negative preconceived notions about the pageantry experience, but this one really, you know, gave her opportunities and reconnected her to her roots. So that was really cool. The second surprising thing was when we talked about Jennifer's relationship with her Korean mother. A little background about her Korean mother. She came to the United States fairly young and without hardly knowing much English. So unfortunately, as Jennifer grew up, they couldn't have very meaningful, open, and complicated discussions as a result of her mother not knowing the English language very well. Moreover, a lot was expected of Jennifer at a young age. I mean, she was really pushed to be successful in life, as we hear a lot of, you know, these Asian parents, they push their kids. They want them to be successful. And I'm bringing this up because I recently heard an interview with Sandra Oh on Mark Maron's What the Fuck podcast. And Sandra Oh talked about the same difficulties she had with her Korean mother, and that nothing she did was ever good enough for her mother. In fact, she posted a note and that her mother gave her in 2015. It read, "I wish you were neater. Then I would love you more." Now, Sandra Oh laughed at this. She laughed this off, and it seemed to suggest the tone that she had on her Instagram page when she posted this note from her mother was that she accepted that that's the way her mother is. She's really rigid, really difficult, and she's just very critical And that's just what it is. However, this isn't the first time I've heard of this kind of relationship that Koreans and or Asian mothers have with their daughters. And Jennifer had a moment during our discussion that was kind of, that kind of summed up how she felt about her relationship with her mother and how she felt surprised me. So a lot of surprises in this discussion. This is me and Jennifer Field.
You're hailing from Silicon Valley, San Jose. So your parents, what's the background and where are they from?
Yeah, so my parents met in San Jose, but my mom is from Seoul, South Korea, and she's an immigrant. She moved here when she was like in her 30s. And then my dad is from Roswell, New Mexico. That's where he's born, but he was raised in Kansas. And he's an attorney. He used to be a diplomat. And they met through my aunt. So my mom's sister had married a like Chinese American soldier in Korea. So they had one of those military romances. I forget the name. There's a Korean word for it when a Korean marries like a, you know, American expat soldier. So like my aunt married my uncle, who I never met. They moved to the States. They divorced. So my aunt was established here and became a citizen that way. Right. So then my mom was able to like immigrate, I guess, easily, more easily because her sister was already here or something. So that's how my mom came here. And then.
So was she living with your aunt at the time?
Probably in the beginning. I should ask her.
But how old was she when she was, when she came here? Do you know?
It was late, like 30s.
Okay. Well, at least she kind of knows herself at that point, but she was single.
Correct.
And then did she have any, she had no children at the time?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I was born like a year and a day after their wedding and her wedding. So like they basically got married and then like had a kid pretty quickly. I don't remember how long they were dating, but probably not that long, but I don't think they were dating that long because my dad basically didn't know how, you know, crazy my mom is.
So your mom, is she adventurous? Did she came here. Did she know the language? Did she know the English? Did she know English? Basically,
supposedly, according to my family, that she's barely spoken English. And obviously you learn English in school, but she never went to college. She never finished college in Korea. So she doesn't have an undergrad education. She didn't really speak much English. I know it sounds weird. It's totally weird. But my dad, like,
I don't find that weird at all.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't think we speak enough languages here. I don't know what other countries are doing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you grow up learning. I know English. I know a little bit of Spanish, but like, I always, when I see people come here, they essentially just know their native language.
Right.
And so to me, it's not a surprise. So I'm just curious, do you know, have you ever talked to her how she adjusted?
We don't have those kind of conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, her English is still really bad. So we can't really talk about anything deep. And she never really taught me Korean because that very reason she was assimilating and she practiced her Korean. I mean, her English on her with her kids at home. So she, as the older she got, the Konglish became more English and less Korean. But okay. Like we don't have deep conversations. That's why I have such a gaping hole in my heart with my parents, because she can't even, we can't talk about anything serious or at length or in deep because she can't speak good English and I can't speak good Korean because she didn't want to teach the Korean to me.
So there's lack of nuance and depth only because of the language barrier.
Because if you can't talk to someone,
that's what I mean. That would be really difficult. How else are you going to? Yeah.
Like, wow. How do you work, make friendships, like fall in love without talk and conversation and like connection? So, I mean,
or just sitting in a room together, like forever by yourself.
When I
go visit my mom, we have to talk about stuff and we're stuck in a room together. I mean, eventually stuff's going to be brought up.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about things obviously, but it's always just very like, it's just very surface.
Right. Okay.
She just basically just talks to me about like making sure, like my whole life, I feel like all my mom talked to me about was making sure I look good, make sure I get good grades, make sure I'm successful, make sure, you know, I get to point A to point B. What are you doing this weekend? How's your friend? Like, it's just all very, yeah. Like the birds and the bees talk was from my dad, not from my mom, for example. I remember that. like about my period and stuff, that talk came from my dad, not my mom.
Interesting.
Which is kind of, yeah. I mean, dads do it, of course, but like, wouldn't the woman that's been through it be the one that the mom, if there is a mom, sometimes people don't have a mom, right? Maternal figure, a female parent, but because I did, I know. Yeah.
your upbringing, was it influenced by Korean culture, food, language?
I would say so. I think so. Like, it was just
going to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's there.
In what ways?
The food, of course, right? I had Korean food like at least every day. I mean, at least every day.
Well, your face lit up there. So why, what is it? What makes you excited? Does it bring back like sentimental like memories in a way?
Yeah. And it's the best food in the world. It's my favorite cuisine, and it's so laborious and takes so much work. And my mom's really good at it. And some of it has kind of an acquired taste, but like, it's not acquired to me. It's very natural for me. And like, mainly like the kimchi, you know? And then, she was a great cook. I mean, sometimes I don't even know what the culture is because it's so ingrained, right? Like shoes off.
It's just part of your life.
Just part of your life. Yeah. You know, prioritizing, being successful, mastering things, you know, so socio-emotional stuff has always been on the back burner. It's all about what can you accomplish? What can you get done? You know, be successful, be rich, be smart, surround your, you know, it's just very like,
wait, those were your expectations?
I mean, my mom always pushed me. It's an Asian parent thing, isn't it? A lot of them.
I honestly don't know. I grew up with white parents.
Oh, you did?
Yes. I'm adopted. I was adopted during the Vietnam War.
Okay.
My mom was Vietnamese. Father was apparently probably a soldier.
Okay.
And then I was adopted as an infant, you know, to an all-American white family.
Okay.
So, but why I brought that up is because like there was like my mom and dad divorced when I was, I don't know, eighth grade, and no one was ever around. And so there was never any expectation of like get good grades, or like they're always just like hang in there. And I was a total latchkey kid. They're just like, just be a good person and be responsible.
That's great.
But there was never like, I don't even think they knew that I did not take my SATs. I went to the beach the day of I was supposed to take it.
Oh my God. Did you go to college?
I went to community college the first year out. Like I graduated with a 2.1.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably with physical education. that put me over the 2.0.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, I'm always curious because like, where does that come from? That expectation of, you know, of hustle. I feel like I've always had that tenacity, but it wasn't ingrained in me. Mm. It was always being like, be responsible, but it feels like with in terms of your mother, were those qualities like innate for you, or were they someone that they had to be nurtured?
I feel like it's a nurture thing, but it feels so innate to me. Right. I feel like it was nurtured, but it was just, like the household was run, like nobody's ever checking in on how you're feeling. Nobody ever wants to know how your day was. It was constantly like good grades, go to dance class, go to piano, you know, do this, do that. I was very overachiever. I had lots of extracurricular activities. Yeah. Since like childhood.
Your background, like, did you grow up around a lot of Koreans and Asians, or was it essentially in a predominantly white community?
I love this question because a lot of times, especially in the last couple of years, last year or two, when people are really talking about, you know, bullying and the BLM movement and stuff like that, that, you know, with Asians that they were they've been bullied, and I actually bullied when they were growing up. Right. And I actually touched on this with Koji once because he had a similar experience where he grew up with all Asians. So I had that experience. So I was actually kind of embarrassed that I was white.
You were.
I was ashamed that I was white.
I was ashamed that I was Asian.
That's the most people. That's the general.
Like most Asian people kind of pivot over to whiteness, unfortunately.
Yeah, they assimilate. Yeah.
No, yeah. But you grew up with a lot of Asian people.
Whites were the minority where I'm from, the neighborhood I'm from.
Okay. Because it's 35% Asian I'm looking at right now.
That sounds about right. Yeah. So in San Jose, That's probably about right. I just know in the part I grew up was East San Jose, whites were only about like 35-40%. So they were a minority. So it was very like equally divided, but it honestly, it felt like there was even less. I mean, it felt like it was like 10% white people. But I remember for some reason at the time growing up, I think it was like 30-40% because I saw it in our demographics at middle school. But it was like, you know, we have the largest community of Vietnamese outside of Vietnam in a city.
Yeah. I read about that. Right.
Yeah. And we have Filipinos, we got Indians, like South Asian Indians. Right. And then, and Mexican, of course. And then, yeah, like Asians, like ruled the school. The Asians were the cool people. So like whites were not cool.
Right. Well, we'll talk about like how uncool Asians are. Like when you get to Hollywood, probably.
Yeah, apparently. Yes.
You know what I mean? Like they're just not cool, apparently.
You
spent your high school overachieving, getting good grades around an Asian, predominantly Asian community. So was it in high school that you, or after high school, that you entered the Miss Asian America pageant?
Yeah. And actually I should footnote that I got sent to private high school on the other side of town. So I still lived in the East Side, but I ended up going to school where whites were the minority. I'm sorry. Whites were the majority. So
you
So
you went to school with a lot of white kids and then your neighborhood was predominantly Asian.
Correct. And up until eighth grade. So like my whole childhood and up until eighth grade, those formative years was all like, whites. Like when I got to private high school on the other side of town and whites were the minority, I was like, what are all these white people here? And it was just so weird. It was like I felt like I grew up, like I used to watch, like, you know, like the movie Dangerous Minds, or like that one that John Singleton did, Higher Learning. Like yeah. Those movies, I felt like that was, I know it was an exaggeration, but I feel like that was like my childhood. And then I got to private high school and it was Clueless. Like the movie Clueless. And I was just like, what is so weird? So, but I still, you know, lived in the same neighborhood and my boyfriends were still from that side of town and stuff. So then, okay, back to what you were saying. Oh yeah. So the Miss Asian America pageant, my cousin actually had.
Whoa, hold on real quick. And I am going to interrupt you because this is super interesting. I didn't realize you then went to a white kind of private school.
College.
So how was your identity at that point? Like, cause it was fully, sounds like it was embodied with, you know, with a lot of Asians and shaped by a lot of Asian culture and friends. And then you go to, you know, Clueless school.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, like I joined the Asia club right away. I hung out. I was like, I gravitated towards like the kids that generally were like the rebels or like their parents were immigrants. Like all my core group of girlfriends from that school, from high school, are not all Asian, but we're all child of immigrants. So I feel like there was something there. There was something there. But so
you
like,
just saw yourself navigating and being attracting yourself to those kind of individuals. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And I rebelled. I was trying to be like a bad girl. And so I was like I just was like, ew, like this school is so like silver spoon fed. And like, it was just a different experience.
You didn't try to fit in.
I mean, we were like well-liked and stuff. And we hung out with like the cool Pete crowd kind of, I hate to say it, but I was never really bullied. I didn't have that experience. So when sometimes people talk about that experience, I'm honest, like I never had that. So I high school was a lot of fun for me. I don't know. I was like, I hung out with the cool people, but I was always sort of like, I don't know how to describe it. I just felt like I was like, I thought I was like super gangster. I thought I was so hard. That's why I was such a bad girl. And I hung out with the bad girls. And eventually we actually all got kicked out.
Why did you embrace,
huh?
Why was this in high school that you embraced that kind of hardness?
I
did that a little bit too.
Did rebel, right? It's natural.
Was that because of house issues? Because Korean mother was strict and father was a lawyer?
Probably, right? And no social, no socio-emotional connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Okay.
Right?
2000, yeah. So Miss America, I cut you off because I wanted to go. I wanted to thank you for backpedaling with me to the going back there. But so going back to Miss America, Miss Asian America. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. I actually entered the local for Miss America and I got fourth runner up.
Oh, wow.
So I entered the local from, it was Miss San Jose and Miss Redwood City, and I got fourth runner up. And that would have taken you to Miss California, which takes you to Miss America. Like the actual, it was part of the Miss America system. But I was so upset that I got fourth runner up because I thought that I was like gonna, should have won. And then I found out later with that particular locale, they never let you win the first time because they say you're not gonna be ready for Miss California. So they make you do the locales, the locals multiple times before you get sent to Miss California to get to Miss America. Because if you won the first time, then you would not be prepared for Miss California and for Miss America. So it's a little, it's almost like it's rigged. Miss Asian America is very, very fair. It's all points. It's not about sponsorship. It's all about the judges scoring. It's very legitimate.
How old were you when you entered that?
So I was 24. I had just graduated college and I knew about it because my cousin had done it when I was a preteen. I watched her on stage. She got top 10. My cousin, for some reason, had found out about it. So that's how I knew about it. So then it was actually her suggestion. And so I entered it. She was like, you're not ready to move to LA yet. How did it happen? Oh, she didn't recommended me to end this other pageant at the same time. She's like, if you're not ready to move to LA, why don't you do this pageant here? And I was like, oh yeah, maybe I'll enter Miss Asian America too. So I entered it. I didn't expect to win, of course. I just thought it was going to be fun. And then I ended up winning and it changed my life.
Okay. So beyond the aesthetic qualities of the pageantry. So is it a celebration of Asian women and celebration of Asian culture? Mm-hmm. Because I've never heard of it. I just heard of like Miss America and you think of course, you just think, you know, what we've seen before typically.
Yeah.
And it always makes me curious. Okay. Like the Asian community was like, fuck, we hate going against all these people. Let's start our own thing in our community. And how right. So like, I guess what I'm curious to know is when you were doing it, is it a celebration of being Asian woman and how did you get empowered by going in that, you know, being a part of that platform?
Yeah, it's really great you asked because that's actually part of their mission is for to have women, young Asian American women, reconnect with their culture. There is a portion called traditional, I think they call it like traditional gown or traditional dress, where you wear your motherland's traditional garb and costume. And so, you know, traditional dress. And that's a really, you know, empowering experience to get in touch and to wear the, you know, wardrobe of what you, from your home country, your parents' home country. You don't have to be, you know, you can be born here.
But what was that like for you putting on those, you know, those clothes and reconnecting with the clothes, I guess.
I love it. I mean, I've done it before. So I've had hanboks and I've done it before, but it was just nice to be able to do it on stage and to represent and to get the best dress. And there was a lot of events, like you go to all, there's a lot of community service stuff. So you do a lot of like charity work in the area. You're like, when you win, and also when you're competing, you do a lot of like visiting like sponsors and like whether it's a parade or like a cultural festival or like visiting a school. And so you're actually involved in the community and doing charity and volunteer work with the community. So everything from like, I think we were involved with the Jade Ribbon campaign to Asian perinatal advocates. Like there was a lot of community organizations that we would go to support and volunteer our time. So there's
you became even more connected to the Asian community as a result of doing it.
Completely, because there's a lot of sponsors and people that are support and surround the event, the actual pageant. And so we are giving them our time and giving them a platform, as well as the fact that some of them, I think some there's also like whether it's like a giant Chinese restaurant that's given the pageant $10,000 because they're a sponsor. So then it's, you know, so it's a lot of community outreach. And I think where it came from, because there's a bunch of Asian pageants, there's like a lot of different titles and different kinds and subsets, but this is the original longest running pageant for Asian American women. And I think where the idea came from is because it came from Miss Chinatown. Miss Chinatown is even more old school. So for whatever the historical reason is, Miss Chinatown was like the first Asian sort of like pageant. And it just had to do with like finding a girl that could speak Mandarin that, from my understanding, forgive me if I'm wrong, but it was basically like a, you know, a community leader position that became sort of a pageant. And then other pageants followed suit. Miss Asian America was the first one after Miss Chinatown. But Miss Chinatown has been around, I think, like 50, 60 years. Miss Asian America, I think we're at like 30. And there's also like Miss Asia USA, and there's a lot of smaller other ones. But yeah, I know it's a great experience. And you do have to speak some of your language for some of the pageant, but it's basically in English. I think Miss Chinatown's like a lot of it is in Mandarin.
Well, I'm glad you educated me about the pageantry, because I any kind of sense of beauty pageantry, I'm like, oh my God, fucking kidding me. But this one, one you were involved in, really connected you to your community.
Correct.
And then you had to speak. I didn't realize like they made you speak your own language, native, like in that map. Would you consider Korean secondary language then for you?
I mean,
or is your first?
Yeah, no, I didn't learn Korean. I mean, I went to Korean school as a kid, so I learned how to read and write it. And then I'm not really conversational though. So I know some Korean, but I'm not conversational.
Okay. So how'd you do in the pageantry?
Oh, that was nothing, because it was, you don't have to know that much. I know enough Korean where like I can go to like Korea or like watch Korean movies or like be in a Korean neighborhood and I can understand a lot of what people are saying. But like the way I formulate my Korean is like I sound like a kindergartner.
Yeah.
Not that good at it.
So when you finished all that and you were done with that, you moved to LA.
Yeah.
And did you have to reconcile it all with, you know, having to market yourself as an Asian American actress, and that there were little, you know, back, you know, I don't know when you came. I know when I came, it was like in early 2000s, there wasn't much representation like there is now. So how was it initially when you got out here?
Well, because I'm very like ambiguous looking, and you know all about this because you're mixed, I'm very like passing white. So like, it didn't really, people weren't like, I didn't have the experience where they're like, oh, you're too Asian. But what I did have the experience of was people are like, I don't know what you are, and I don't know how to put you. And the fact that you are Asian and identify with Asian is a good thing. You should be proud of it. But sometimes people, the movies and the stories, they want just like straight Asian. They don't understand the full landscape of.
That's what, right? Just, I got, that's why I got out of acting. I just, yeah. It drove me nuts.
It's just, you don't have to be like, you know, fresh off the boat to be considered an Asian. Like there is a whole world, you know. I noticed like with the Black community, a lot of people are half Black, half white, and they fully identify with their Blackness, and like the community embraces it, you know? And it's like, that's for, with Asian, it's not like we're outsiders, but there is a little of that. It's almost like not everybody feels this way, but you know what I'm talking about, right? It's we are part of the landscape as well. We are just as Asian. And even if you're like adopted, like I have a bunch of friends, several friends that are like, you know, like you, they were like, they don't know the language. They don't know their parents, but they were adopted, you know?
Yeah. What happens is imposter syndrome, like myself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just got really uncomfortable. Like when I did a few films that played at Asian American film festivals, I didn't like going there. I was just like, fuck, I don't fit in with this community, you know? And the only reason I did was just using it to my advantage because I happen to be Asian.
Yeah.
But it's taken me years and rounds of therapy to kind of come to that, you know, acceptance in a lot of ways. And did you ever, you know, I guess, did you ever take any roles that you knew were stereotypical, but you needed the money, the exposure, or the privilege of working with someone who was really, really good?
Correct. Yes. There was one. It was just this USC like student film. Actually, I think he had just graduated USC, so it wasn't affiliated with the school. But I remember auditioning there at USC. So it's just a student film. But I remember back then it had like weird, like it's cringy. It's cringeworthy just thinking about it, because the Asian male was written and directed by a white filmmaker. And the lead Asian male, he was just like, he was just fitting that stereotype of like, you know, not like weak and effeminate and like shy and reserved. It was just very stereotypical. And I was like this like dragon lady type of girl, working girl. It was a, I don't even want to, yeah. And I remember at the time feeling the cringe. There was something, it just felt. And I remember being confused why the filmmaker was not to say that he can't make a short film about the a story that takes place in, say, Koreatown. But like, I remember thinking, I wanted to ask him what inspired you to write and direct the story, but I wasn't assertive enough. And I certainly was not. I was so new.
Oh my God, that is so true. When I first came here, I was never assertive enough or being an advocate for myself.
Exactly.
In those ways.
Yeah. You're just like, I want to work. I want to get the footage. I want to make the money or whatever.
Yeah. And all the while, like your integrity is like dissolving inside of you. You know?
I was just like, and partly was, I was like, maybe I'm wrong and it's not that bad. I mean, this guy I'm working with, this is Korean American, like he's not getting offended by it.
So did you book the job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we filmed it. Yeah.
Oh, you did. So that was like your experience of like, okay.
Yeah.
So when you were done with it, were you kind of like, I'm not going to do this shit again, like put myself in that position, or what'd you learn from it?
I didn't really have that, to be honest, that kind of hindsight. I was just like, okay, it's another job. And I didn't make any decisions. I was just like taking whatever work came my way. Now I'm at a point where I'm, of course, you know, you can decline stuff and you can be choosier. Even still, I take work. I've still regretted even in the last year or two, not so much because they're like, you know, racist, there's tinges of racism towards Asians. It's more just, I've taken work sometimes because, yeah, you wanted to work with someone, you needed money, you thought it was the right choice. So, yeah, I'm still, you know, learning how to say no. But, man, in the beginning, you're just, I don't know, maybe I should have had a manager. And says, Jennifer, steer away from these things. But, you know, you're just so excited to get on camera and to make connections. And
absolutely. In regards to where you are now in your career, are there a lot more available parts for you just to be Jen Fields without identifying as a Korean, where you could just be a person?
Yes. I think there's a lot of that. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like it's nice when it says all ethnicities. Uh-huh. Or they put multiple. Yeah. You can be any ethnicity basically. Yeah. Yeah. My, you know, but because the culture is so ingrained in me, there's values, there's priorities. There's like a, things like I think that just come out in my work in general. Like I think, you know, Koreans are, there's something about the culture. Every Korean I know is always like, they're fucking, I don't know how to say it. Just always hustling work. They're just working it. Cause it's ingrained in the culture to be productive and to be a master at things. Like every single person in my family is like not like a homeless person on the street, just wasting their life away.
Nose to the ground, you know, grinding. Yeah. Nose to the grindstone.
They're just fucking trying to do something
and make something of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no like,
it's an immigrant mentality too.
It is, huh? Right.
It really is. I mean, I think that's why, you know, I kind of survived my own adoption story because, you know, the adoptee's an immigrant, you know, we're kind of, you know, it's something ingrained where you've, and maybe you feel the same way, but I feel like because we are Asian and or people of color or immigrants or, you know, whose mother is an immigrant, that you always feel like you have to work twice as hard.
Yeah.
And what was given to you, no matter what was given to you, if it's, even if you come from wealth.
I mean, like what my mom came with and who my mom is, like I've already, I think, exceeded leaps and bounds above her, even if she's not that proud. Mm. I mean, she says she's proud, but she says she's proud of me to her friends. I hear it through the friends.
She doesn't really say it to me. I hear it from her friends. I say, your mom's so proud of you. She always talks about you, but she doesn't say it to my face. And all she does is ask me why I'm not rich. And this is a stupid, vain thing and superficial and shallow, but she's just always like, why aren't you married? Why aren't you married to a rich guy? She doesn't understand, like, that's not the goal in life, but.
So with your own aspirations, do you feel like, you know, because you've gone on an unconventional route, because you're an actor, actress, and an artist, that, and you are successful because you're fucking working, and only, what is it, 10% do in the SAG union. So, but is it because of the choice of career that's always, because of the uncertainty that's always maybe made your mother a little uncomfortable?
Yeah, I'm sure that if I had a regular like corporate job at Netflix or something, I think everything would be fine. Or maybe she'd find something else to complain about. But she, I think that, yeah, she's more worried and harder on me. And I'm not good enough because, yeah, they just want me to be like wealthy. They just want me to be rich.
And what is the mindset behind that? I'm curious, because is it because like, hey, you come here to America, you better, it's like, everyone who comes here, like the goal is to become a wealthy entrepreneur and the 1% that, like, you know, that hardly exists. I mean, it happens.
Right.
But like, that's like a lot to carry.
Right. Right. Because it's like the American dream. They come here to.
Yes.
Better than what they had back home.
Right. By the way, did you ever meet your grandparents at all? Because you talked about your mom.
Yeah.
What about the mom's side?
Yes, of course. Yeah. And my Hadabaji and my Halmoni, they're both passed, of course. But no, I shouldn't say of course, but they are. Yeah, I've spent time. I've been to Korea 3 times. I got to go back to the motherland. Every time I went, we would stay like 3.5-4 weeks. We'd go for like a whole month. So I spent a lot of time. And they visited here. So I have a lot of family there. And actually, we're trying to go back. My mom and I are trying to go back to Korea. But it's always, when you go, you stay a month. And it's very expensive there, as you know. It's like going at fucking.
I had no idea.
It's expensive. It's just there's no like, what is it? The dollar exchange rate. Like if you go back to Vietnam or Thailand, you get more for your dollar. No, you know, it's about the same usually, or it's a little more. It's very expensive there. And then like, you know, it's just, and then you shop, right? I got to shop when I'm there. The best. You got to come back with all this stuff. There's so much there, imports you got to bring. And then also the shopping, just the skincare, the clothing. It's just, there's too many things. If I'm going to go there, you got to bring like an extra suitcase just for all the stuff to bring back. Besides bringing gifts back, you know, to people here. Like there's just so much. And the food is outstanding. And anyway, have you been back to the motherland?
No, I have not. No.
And why? And is it on the, Is it in your plans?
You know, yes, but I admit there's other places I would rather go right now. I want to go to Budapest. I want to go back to Paris. I've only been to Europe once.
Okay.
And when people say, well, don't you want to go back? Yeah, of course. But there's also a lot of like heavy shit to know that I'm going where I'm going back to.
Really? It's heavy?
Yeah, I think, yeah, for me it is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because it was something that that has shaped me in the oddest way. And I came here with a Vietnamese brother that was mixed too.
Okay.
But we were adopted in different families. And then I had a Vietnamese sister who tracked me down who I found out. And I found out about my family as a result of that. So everything because of my adoption, where I was, you know, like the place of my birth has always had a sense of just tragedy and trauma to it, to be honest with you. It's always been hard for me to acknowledge, not the trauma, but just that I'm there, because I've never felt a strong connection with it at all. Even though I am Vietnamese, and it's shaped me and beyond belief, whether I like to think it or not, who I am to this point, but I don't have a cultural connection to it. I don't have a language connection to it. I don't have a community connection to it, the most important thing. And I don't have a family connection to it, mm-hmm. other than those that were brought here to America that found me, but I don't have a connection with them either. It's more just like, hey, I'm your brother.
You guys haven't gotten close.
No. And that's what I've usually read, that it's because you don't have history together. And it's overwhelming. Like, they're coming into your life and telling you mm-hmm. that, because I have an older sister. She's like 8 years older than me. She saw me when I was an infant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a lot of bad stuff with my Vietnamese mother. She was apparently very violent and was on a lot of drugs and mm-hmm. some prostitutes, like the whole nine,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's what I was told, like, when she came back into my life, who my mother was. And, you know, and Cheryl, who was my biological Vietnamese sister who tracked me down, mm-hmm. was a great individual. I really liked her a lot, but everything was just really, and she was a great person, but everything, the place of our birth, where our story was rooted from, was always kind of tragic and kind of abandoned in a way. And I have no memory of it other than what, when I was in the womb and when I was in an adoption foster home, I guess. Other than that, I grew up with a white family, thinking I was white as a kid. And I had major problems, like, when I, you know, came out here.
Cause wait, did you not know that you were adopted?
Oh, I knew I was adopted. Yeah. Wait. Yeah. My brothers and sisters, like, 6'5", you know, it was very apparent. But, you know, you want to fit in. I was eager to fit in. I was eager to, you know, just fit in the community.
Where did you grow up?
It was in San Diego, a little town called, a big town now, called Escondido.
No, I know where that is. My cousins are in Carlsbad.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's where all, like, so my dad, he lives in Coronado. My mom lives in Carlsbad right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's pretty light down there.
It's great. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's great living. It's great. It's great living.
It's great living, but, you know, there's something about, like, when, there's something about, like, when I go down there, like, no, like, here, I like you. Cause, like, hey, what do you do? You're Jen. Oh, I'm an actress. I'm in this show. Or, hey, I'm a musician. Or, hey, I'm a producer. Or, hey, I'm trying to start this company. There, it's like, man, just working and surfing, bro. Just, it's very, you know, I need, like, pressure in my life and stress to thrive.
Gotcha.
And everything is so, you know, just work and family and just steady.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great place to raise a family, for sure.
It is.
Yeah.
It totally is. Okay. Look, thank you for asking those questions. Wow. Me talk about myself.
I love one. I don't want to talk about me.
So I have this, I usually end the podcast with, you know, why do you feel optimistic about, you know, your mixed identity moving forward, but I want to change things up a little bit.
Okay.
Why do you feel you know, if you were to remove your mixed identity and everything else, who is Jen? Who is Jennifer Fields?
You mean, like, our personality traits and stuff?
Yeah. Cause, like, you know, we're often identified as, like, you know, I'm this, or I'm sis, or, you know,
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, strip all that shit down. And who is Jennifer Field?
Well, Fields. Are we talking about dark stuff or good stuff or all of it? That or the good.
And a couple sentences.
Well, I am a very open-minded, free-thinking, passionate, loyal, deep-thinking. I said free thinking, also deep thinking, adventurous person. That's me in a nutshell.
Thank you so much, Jennifer Field, for coming on the Multiracial White Boy podcast. I hope all of you enjoyed that conversation that Jen and me had. That was terrific. Once again, everybody, I'm the host, Kim Noonan. Please remember to subscribe to the Multiracial White Boy podcast.
write a review of the podcast. Write a review of this episode right now. Go at it. You do that. But look, again, your reviews go a long way. And so far, the support for this podcast has been terrific. And it means a lot to me. Thank you. Once again, podcast episodes every other Thursday. So 2 weeks from June 2nd, which is going to be June 16th, I'm assuming. So I hope to see you then. Please tune in. Another great guest around the corner. Have a great couple weeks, everybody. Take care.